in my experience too, the rangers will just kind of take a look at your family and just like, they always pinpoint the right hike for you.
And exactly.
And they don't always offer the easiest one, right? I mean, they sometimes I feel like they want to push you just a little bit out of your comfort zone.
Hi, everyone. I'm Stephanie.
And I'm Jeremy.
Authors of Where Should We Camp Next? A 50-state guide to amazing campgrounds and other unique outdoor accommodations.
Almost 12 years ago, we bought a pop-up camper that changed our lives and introduced us to the joys of RV travel.
Join us now as we talk about where to camp, what gear to bring, and the best food to cook.
We will also keep you dialed in to the latest RV innovations from people in the know.
So pull up a chair and join us around the digital campfire.
This is the RV Atlas. Hello, everybody, and welcome to today's episode of the RV Atlas. Today, I am excited to welcome back onto the show Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van, and we are actually kicking off a trilogy on spring desert camping. Lauren had suggested this as a topic, and I thought, well, that sounds great. Let's do it. Let's do a podcast episode on it. And then she put together her notes on Joshua Tree, Death Valley, and Valley of Fire, and I quickly realized that this was three episodes worth of great podcasts. So I asked Lauren if she would do an episode on Joshua Tree, a separate episode on Death Valley, and then a separate episode on Valley of Fire, and she agreed to do it. So we're going to be rolling these episodes out either three in a row or one per week for the next 3 weeks. I have not decided yet at the moment that I'm recording this, but you will be getting all of these great episodes very, very quickly. I am so excited for this episode on Joshua Tree National Park. Lauren's going to give us an overview of the best campgrounds inside the park, the best private campgrounds outside of the park. She's going to talk about hikes. She's going to talk about stargazing. She's going to talk about sound baths, and she's going to give us lots of great food recommendations. So if you are planning a trip to Joshua Tree National Park now, or at some point in the future, you are going to want to make sure you listen to this episode of the RV Atlas. So we'll be back in a second with Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Neighbor. Is your driveway too small for the RV of your dreams? Does your homeowners association not allow you to park your RV on your own property? Are you worried about paying top dollar to leave your RV at a sketchy storage facility? When it comes to finding safe and affordable RV storage, are you feeling totally stuck? Then maybe it's time you gave Neighbor a try. Neighbor.com/RV Atlas can help you find safe, closer, more convenient storage right in your own neighborhood. Stay tuned for a special offer just for our listeners. Neighbor connects you and your neighbors so that you can find affordable RV storage close to your home. You help them earn extra cash while they keep your RV safe at their home. When I use Neighbor to search for storage options near my house, I was surprised to find dozens of affordable options. Neighbor also offers a wide variety of plans so you can choose the right protection that best suits your needs. You'll be able to quickly and easily add a property protection plan while placing a storage reservation. Give your RV a home, not a storage space. Visit neighbor.com/RV Atlas for 50% off your first month of storage with Neighbor. That's neighbor.com/RV Atlas for 50% off your first month of RV storage. Hello, Lauren Eber, and welcome back to the RV Atlas. It's so good to have you here. How are you doing?
I am great. It's so good to be back. Thanks for having me.
And our last two episodes were California beach camping, right? That was the last time you came on the show, I think.
Yeah, it was last summer, just as we were getting ready to head out on a big California coastal road trip, and had such a fun time sharing all of our favorite tips for the California coast.
You packed so much in. And my guess is we were probably going to do that in one episode. And then at some point we were like, no, this is two episodes. And this, the same thing, because you don't go small on this stuff. So I think the same thing kind of happened here. Like initially we were talking about one episode on spring desert camping. But then I realized, like you said, oh, I think maybe it's two episodes. I was like, this is three episodes. So we've got a trilogy here. So give everyone the overview of what we're going to do in these three episodes that we're going to run in the coming weeks.
Yeah. So, you know, we were chatting and you asked me, hey, what do you think about coming on and talking about spring. And right away I said, all right, Jeremy, but spring camping to me means desert. For me, springtime is the perfect time to check out some of the amazing desert parks that we have in the Western US. They're super easy to get to from where I live in Southern California, but also from all over the United States with some great travel hubs. And spring is just the perfect time for the desert because the desert in the winter, it can get really cold. It has very extreme temperatures. Deserts have very extreme temperatures in the winter, frequently getting snowy and too cold to comfortably camp at night. And summer temperatures are just extremely hot and dry. Many of the parks even close. So you're really looking at shoulder seasons for desert camping. And I like going in the fall as well, but spring has the added benefit of desert bloom, which is the blossoming of wildflowers. So it's just an extra special, beautiful, magical time to go. You don't always catch the biggest bloom. Bloom times can vary based on the elevation of the particular park, how much it rained that year. So it's hard to predict exactly when it's going to bloom in any given year. But if that's really what I'm going to see, I'll just call the ranger station or follow the social media sites of the parks I'm interested in. And that's a great way of kind of tracking when you're going to catch the best bloom.
So, okay, so tell us the three different spring desert locations, and we're going to do one per episode. So what are the three locations you're going to take us to in these three podcasts?
Yeah. So, you know, I could have come up with a much longer list, but the three that I really wanted to highlight that are three of my very favorite places to go are Joshua Tree, Death Valley, and Valley of Fire in Nevada.
Okay. Those sound like three pretty epic and amazing locations to me. And I've seen your pictures, you know, on A Fam with a Van. I've seen your Instagram photos of these locations. So I'm so excited. And if you want to check the show notes, my dear listeners, thervatlas.com will have some of those photos in there as well. So Shall we go to Joshua Tree National Park first for this episode?
Let's do it. And before we dive in, I did just want to give an honorable mention to Zion and the Utah Big Five parks, because people always ask me, when's the best time to go? And I always suggest spring. So even though we're not talking about those now, I did do some episodes for you on Zion in the past. And so those are also great parks to go to in the spring. I did just want to mention that. But let's talk about Joshua Tree.
Yeah, and I'll link to that, those episodes in the show notes as well for those that are interested in Zion, because those were great episodes too. So take us to Joshua Tree National Park. What do we need to know about getting there?
Yeah, so first of all, getting there, it's actually pretty accessible. It's only a 2.5 hour drive from Los Angeles or a 3 hour drive from Las Vegas, and it's very close to Palm Springs. So if you are coming in from far away and you want to fly into one of those travel hubs and rent an RV or a van or a car and drive in, that's totally doable. Or if you are in the Southwest, then it's an easy drive to get there.
You're making me realize, we're in New Jersey and we love to fly and rent RVs. I could be in Joshua. I could wake up in the morning and be in Joshua Tree National Park in the evening, I think, pretty easy.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, totally. You could just fly into LA or Vegas and rent an RV, and then it's an easy drive to get there.
Okay, great. So you want to give us sort of an overview of Joshua Tree National Park for those that aren't super familiar? I mean, it's a famous name, but I certainly don't think it's in the top 10 most visited or anything like that. So give us an overview.
Yeah, it's not in the top 10 most visited. I think it's in the top half, though. It's definitely, a well-known park, but it's totally iconic. It's not for nothing that it's the title of U2's most popular album. It really is a special place that has a sort of magical energy. It's this really otherworldly combination of granite boulders, these crazy looking tufted Joshua trees, and scrappy desert wildlife, cacti and animals that somehow managed to survive in this really parched wilderness. It's hard to spend any time there without it leaving an impression on you. It really is one of those places where when you go, you really sort of feel like you've had an experience.
And sort of that spiritual experience too. And you talk about YouTube's Joshua Tree for sure. So what is a Joshua Tree? It has sort of a spiritual meaning to it.
Yeah. So a Joshua Tree itself, there are these crazy looking trees that you really can only find in the Mojave Desert. And not within the bounds of the park, but in and around Joshua Tree. And they are actually from the agave family. And they really look like they came out of a Dr. Seuss book, like the Lorax or something like that. And if you are researching Joshua Tree online, almost every article you come across makes a reference to the landscape looking like it's from a Dr. Seuss book, and with good reason. These crazy trees, they start out growing straight up with a flower on top. And then what happens is that animals, it can be insects, moths, or little rodents, nibble the flowers. And then once those flowers get eaten, then it causes the branches to shoot out sideways from where the flower was growing. So they wind up in these crazy sort of branching formations, and they can grow as high as 40 feet. And I've read that they can live as long as 500 years, although 150 is typical. So,
and is there some aspect to it where it looks like somebody throwing their arms up in the air and praying? I mean, is that part of the meaning there, or am I making that up?
Well, so there's some lore around that the way the trees were named is that as Mormon immigrants were crossing into the desert as pioneers, that they thought that they looked like the biblical figure Joshua, sort of throwing his arms up and welcoming them or pointing the way to the west. It's not clear whether that's actually real, but that's sort of the lore around how the trees got their names.
Okay, that is such a great overview. So now you're going to break down some of the camping options inside the national park. So what are the options that you'd recommend?
Yeah, so I wanted to spend some time on this because when you first start looking at the camping options in Joshua Tree, I think it can be kind of overwhelming because there are a lot of different campgrounds and it can be hard to make heads or tails about what's the difference between them, which ones do you want to stay in, not want to stay in. A lot of them are first come, first serve. So I kind of broke it down into the reservable national park campgrounds, the first come, first serve national park campgrounds, and then a few private or RV oriented campgrounds that are outside of the boundaries of the park, but still convenient.
Oh my gosh, thank you so much. I was literally on Yosemite's website today having the same experience. Like some of these national parks that have 8 or 10 or 12 camping options, you do kind of want to throw your arms out in the air and say, you know, where do I even begin? And then you've got to figure out how to get the reservation. So I'm excited for this. Give us the breakdown of the different options.
Yeah, you're totally right, Jeremy. And especially at these popular parks, you really have to have a strategy. So if you haven't figured out in advance what campground you're going for, it can make it that much harder to get a spot. So that said, though, I wanted to go over President's Weekend to Joshua Tree and just decided last minute and didn't have a reservation. And I was able to get actually a few different spots for myself and a friend just by checking for last minute cancellations. So it is possible.
I love you're giving me hope.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right. So starting with the reservable campgrounds, the main campground inside of the park boundaries is called Jumbo Rocks. It has 124 sites. It's very centrally located on Park Boulevard, which is the main road that goes through the park and hits the primary sites that you're going to want to see. It's not far from the visitor centers. So Jumbo Rocks it's highly recommended. It's a great campground. The nice thing about the Joshua Tree campgrounds that I really love is that they have really cool boulder formations. And our kids love going because we just sort of let them loose on the boulders and they just have a great time scrambling around and parents can hang out in the campground and relax. So Jumbo Rocks I would say that's sort of your first target as the primary sort of big campground in Joshua Tree.
And you can go to the National Park Service and they usually have good information on this, but do the sites accommodate at least somewhat larger RVs, or is it more of tiny trailers and vans and tents? What's your take on that?
Yeah, they can. I'm not sure of the footage, so definitely go check, but they can accommodate some RVs. There definitely aren't going to be any hookups. And in fact, it's really important to note that there's not even any running water. So if you're going to any of these campgrounds inside of the boundaries of the park, many of them don't even have running water. So that means you need to bring in all of your drinking water or any other water that you're going to want to have with you.
And having some solar would certainly be nice too, right? If you want to do this kind of camping.
Yeah, it always helps. We're fortunate that we have solar on our van, so we can run our fridge and everything. But yeah, and as a matter of fact, many of them don't even allow generators, or if they do, they're for very limited hours, like 2 hours a day in the evenings. So it's definitely a park where you're going to want to be prepared, or if you feel like you need those kinds of amenities, then you're going to be looking at staying at an RV park outside of the park boundaries.
Okay, so Jumbo Rocks is decent sized at 124 yeah. sites. So how about Indian Cove?
So Indian Cove is actually the place that we go most often. It's actually located, it's a national park campground, and it's within the park boundaries, but it's actually outside of the entrance gate. And it's sort of on the northeastern side of the park, but it's a very easy drive from the campground to get into the park boundaries. But it's not the spot if you want to be sort of in the most central location. We like it though, because it's right outside, it's a little bit lower key. It's a little bit easier if you are bringing a dog. It has the most wonderful rock formations, and our kids, they like to go just so that they can literally spend 2 days climbing the boulders and we don't have to do anything else. But, you know, we've been to Joshua Tree many times, so I don't always feel the need to go in and see the main sights. It's even if it's your first time to go to Joshua Tree, it's a great place to stay, but you're going to want to get yourself into the park to see all of the big attractions during the day.
But why is it easier for your dog? I'm just curious.
So, you know, national parks are really limited in terms of what areas dogs can go on. And for the most part, they're only allowed on roads that cars can go on. So whether it's paved roads or dirt roads, but as a general rule, dogs can typically only go where cars can go. At Indian Cove Campground, there are some trails and walks and things that you can do in the campground itself where dogs are allowed to go. And when we go there, we often don't even ever actually leave what we can walk to from the campground. So the dog can be with us the whole time and it's not a problem.
That is so cool. So you go to Indian Cove to just kind of chill out right in that immediate environment of the campground. And that's good enough for you guys, right? Because you've been before and you've seen a lot of the sites.
Yeah, if we're just looking for a quick little 2 or 3 day getaway, yeah, it's perfect. We go, it's easy. We, you know, never even have to leave the campground.
Lauren, I'm beyond jealous. Like when you go for a quick little 2 or 3 day getaway, you go to Joshua Tree National Park. I go to Turkey Swamp Park in Freehold, New Jersey. It's just, I mean, the difference is the things that you have within striking distance really do make me jealous. So I'm hoping that Stephanie and I and the boys get out there and you can help me score all these great sights at these places.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. But you better be careful, because if you go to Joshua Tree, I'm crashing your trip.
No. That's a given. That's a given. Okay, so if we're not going to do Jumbo Rocks or Indian Cove, we still have other options. What are a few of those?
Yeah. So Ryan Campground is another one that's still highly recommended. It's smaller, 31 sites, but it's centrally located on Park Boulevard still. Same deal, pit toilets, no water. But, you know, if you can get a reservation at any of those three, Jumbo Rocks, Indian Cove, or Ryan, you're going to be, you know, pretty centrally located, easy striking distance to all of the main attractions in the park. They're all fantastic, and I wouldn't hesitate to reserve a spot at any of those.
And Black Rock is another relatively big one with 99 sites.
Yeah, so then you get to Black Rock and Cottonwood, both of which are perfectly fine. There's no problem with them. And if that's what's available, go for it. They're just a little bit less centrally located. And Cottonwood in particular is... it just doesn't have the same sort of boulder formations that make the other campgrounds so impressive and really give you that true kind of Joshua Tree feeling. But there's nothing wrong with them, and I wouldn't hesitate to stay at any of them. I just wouldn't put them as high on my priority list if you're trying to figure out, okay, what's the campground that we really want to stay in.
Such great advice. Go ahead. Yeah. I'm sorry.
No, just two other things, though, considerations are that Black Rock, because of where it's located, it does have more services. It's got a dump station, cell service, it has running water, flush toilets. So if those things matter to you, those are some of the advantages. And then Cottonwood is actually the darkest of all of the parks, and Joshua Tree is a dark sky park, and many people go there just for the stargazing. So if you're primary reason or one of the priorities for you in going to Joshua Tree is good stargazing, then it might be worth it to go to Cottonwood and be a little bit farther out because you're going to get the darkest skies.
This is such great content, frankly, because this is so nuanced, right? I mean, you're getting different experiences at different campgrounds within the same national park, which is usually the case, you know, in Acadia and Yosemite and Great Smoky Mountains, different campgrounds are going to give you different types of experiences. So it's so cool that you know all of these so well. How about first come, first serve options?
Yeah. So the first come, first serve campgrounds are the gems. These are all beautifully located, incredibly scenic. They're gorgeous campgrounds, but because they're first come, first serve, you just can't be guaranteed to get them. So if you have the luxury of going to Joshua Tree in the middle of a week, not on a holiday weekend, not, you know, during one of the busiest times, and you want to just sort of show up and see what you can snag, then, you know, if you can get a spot at Hidden Valley, White Tank, or Bell, you're golden. They are beautiful campgrounds. The sites are spaced a little bit more. They're a little bit more private. They're smaller, and they're beautiful.
I'm not trying to stump you here, but why do you think those three are first come, first serve, as opposed to the other one? Is there some logic behind that? Because like at Cape Hatteras National Seashore, for instance, one of the campgrounds is first come, first served. And it's for a really great reason, because it floods there so much. And they don't want anyone to be able to really plan ahead and go there. But if you're willing to just show up and take a look, you can grab a site. So is there some particular reason these are the first come, first served, as opposed to the others?
I'm not aware of a particular reason like that. I think it's just sort of legacy that it used to be the case that a lot of Joshua Tree was first come, first serve. There's a big, long time, well-established climbing community. And I think they like to keep first come, first serve campsites available so that climbers have a chance at getting a campground when they come. Sort of similar to Yosemite. Is it Camp 3? Am I screwing that up?
But I think it's Camp 4.
Camp 4. Thank you. Camp 4. That's my COVID brain. But Camp 4 in Yosemite is the one that's sort of that climber campground that people show up and you've got that first come, first serve. So my guess is that it kind of comes from that camping community or climbing community legacy of Joshua Tree. But I don't really know.
Well, no, that's fascinating. And I'm not saying this as a critique. It does sort of favor locals too, right? So that somebody who's just, I'm free this weekend. Let me see if I can grab a campsite. I mean, I think that's nice that they keep a few of the campgrounds that way.
Now, yeah, I think that's right.
Now, we do have options for private campgrounds outside of the park. So if you need full hookups and you don't have the solar set up, you don't want to dry camp, do you have some good options there as well?
Definitely. And this is a major destination, as is the nearby Palm Springs area. So there are lots of facilities. And in fact, it's totally possible to stay in Palm Springs, Palm Desert, and do Joshua Tree as a day trip. Although, you know, I personally would say, you know, go camp, really immerse yourself in the park. But that is definitely an option as well, if there's a place there that you know you like to stay. So one great option is the Palm Springs Joshua Tree KOA. A lot of people use that as a home base. Same with Joshua Tree Lake RV and Campground. We've never stayed at those places, but I have a lot of friends who are RVers who've stayed there and really like them. And then another cool option that actually just sort of opened up is a place called Auto Camp Joshua Tree. And it's an Airstream hotel. So they've taken all these Airstream trailers and set them up as hotel suites. It is a splurge. This is not economy camping. But if you love the idea of staying in an Airstream and you want to go to Joshua Tree and have this cool sort of Airstream experience, it could be a fun place to stay. And there are some food options and other amenities there as well that make it look pretty cool.
Yeah, I mean, auto camp's probably 300, 400, 500, maybe 600 a night. I wouldn't be shocked. I've actually suggested to people that if you're like flirting with the idea of buying an Airstream, you know, go stay in an auto camp for a few nights and see how you like actually sleeping in an Airstream for a few nights. So anything else we need to know about private campgrounds outside of the park?
Yes. The one thing that I would say is that this is not a place where you can count on public transportation and shuttles to get you around. So, you know, in my Zion episodes, I talked about how easy it is to stay outside of the park and then catch a shuttle from Springdale or wherever you're staying and use the park shuttle system. Joshua Tree doesn't have a shuttle system and the public transportation is not great. So this is an area where I would plan on, if you're staying outside the park or even inside the park, you want to have a car that you can drive around to do your sightseeing. And so that means if you've got a big RV that you don't want to have to unhook, you want to consider bringing a towed. Or if, you know, if you've got a trailer, then that's easy. You can have your vehicle, or you could consider, I have friends who have just rented a car in the area and then used that to get around while their RV stays behind at the RV park.
Now, Zion you hear so much about overcrowding at Zion. Is Joshua Tree not in that category of difficulty, like in terms of finding parking at trailheads and all that stuff?
It's crowded, but I don't think it's on the scale of Zion or even Yosemite. You know, I've never been there and felt like so choked off that I couldn't go see the things I wanted to see. So there are definitely going to be lots of other people around. You might have a line to talk to a ranger. You might have to wait a few minutes to get a parking space, but at some of the most popular trailheads, but it's, for me, it's always been manageable.
Okay. So we're actually going to come back in a second and talk about some of your favorite things to do, activities and hiking and all that good stuff. But before we do that, we have a sponsored message from our friends at Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts. Whether you enjoy the comfort of a luxury cabin, a deluxe RV site, or prefer to try some unique options like yurts, treehouses, or covered wagons, award-winning Jellystone Parks has a variety of first-rate accommodations, attractions, and activities to provide the setting for an affordable and fun family vacation. Our family has been making great camping memories at Jellystone Park for years, and we can't wait to get back and see Yogi Bear and friends this spring and summer. Jellystone Park locations have everything you and your family will need to make long-lasting camping memories, from amazing water zones including pools, splash grounds, and splash pads to mini golf, wagon rides, and jumping pillows. Jellystone Park is the best place for family entertainment this year. You will also find many themed weekend events, including appearances from Yogi Bear and friends. You will notice that family fun at our exciting camp resorts is the main attraction. With over 75 locations across the United States and Canada, make Jellystone Park part of your vacation this spring and summer. Remember, it's not just a campground, it's Jellystone Park. To find out more and book your spring and summer getaways, head on over to jellystonepark.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here again with Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van, and she's giving us a terrific overview of Joshua Tree National Park. We talked about the campgrounds inside of the park. We talked about some private campgrounds outside of the park. And now we're going to talk about activities. Lauren, I know your family is definitely a hiking family. So let's get started and give us some hiking recommendations.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, you can see a lot in Joshua Tree just driving along Park Boulevard and looking out your window. But the thing about desert landscapes is that it's all in the subtle details. You know, at first in the desert, you can sort of be like, oh, what is there to really see? But then you get out and your eyes have to sort of recalibrate. You recalibrate to the sort of desert ecosystem, and you start to notice little things like a tiny little plant that's growing out of a little patch of granite, or small little marmots that are peeking out, or roadrunners. It's not the kind of landscape that's on the grand scale like Yellowstone, but it's so amazing the way that all of these plants and animals eke out an existence in this very spare landscape. So I highly recommend get out of your car, do some of the nature trails, do some of the hikes, and give yourself time, your brain time, to sort of adjust to the Spartan landscape. So with that in mind, there are a lot of great little trails that you can do. I also recommend, very much so, especially in this kind of desert environment, before you choose the hikes that you're going to do, stop in at the ranger station, get a current map, find out what the closures are, if there are any warnings, and get recommendations from the rangers for the best hike for your group, your desired length and difficulty, and then listen to what the rangers tell you, because when you're out in these desert environments, no water around, no way to, you know, no cell signal, you really don't want to find yourself in a difficult situation where you've gone on a trail that was too hot and dry and you find yourself stranded.
Hashtag truth. I mean, those are just true words for our listeners. And I also think, like, in my experience too, the rangers will just kind of take a look at your family and just, like, they always pinpoint the right hike for you.
And exactly.
And they don't always offer the easiest one, right? I mean, they sometimes I feel like they want to push you just a little bit out of your comfort zone. But they're so good.
Totally.
They're so good at doing that. I mean, a gifted ranger is going to tell your family exactly what hike to do. So what are some of your favorites?
Yeah. So some of the ones that are, these are the short little trails that should definitely be on any trip to Joshua Tree, and you can do them over and over again. There's a really wonderful little Hidden Valley Nature Trail. This is a perfect one to do with kids or without kids. It's a little 1 mile loop. It has a lot of Joshua trees, yuccas, some boulders that you can climb on. And it's a great, very short little introduction to the different things that Joshua Tree has to offer. It's a great spot to go kind of around lunchtime, because there's a Hidden Valley picnic area there. That's a good spot to stop and have your picnic lunch. So you can do the little nature trail either before or after your lunch and stop at the Hidden Valley picnic area.
That sounds good. We've got lots more though.
Yep. Okay. There is the Cholla Cactus Garden. It's a little 1/4 mile loop trail. And if you only get out of your car one time in Joshua Tree, it should be here. It's a really beautiful little trail to see the all of the different Cholla cactus. And it's particularly beautiful when the sun is low in the sky and the Cholla sort of glows as the light hits all of the different spines. So either, you know, it's a great thing to do for sunrise or sunset, or, you know, close to those times of day.
Sounds epic for somebody who's into macro photography too. Like you're saying, like, so much of it is in the details.
Oh yeah.
Now, how big are the cactus? Are they like, are they small ones? Are they human sized? How big are they?
Well, they range, but a Cholla on average, I would say, comes up to about an adult knee. And there are all kinds of different varieties: pencil Cholla, jumping Cholla, teddy bear Cholla, all different kinds.
Now you're just showing off. I'm very impressed, you know, the different variety of Cholla. That's awesome. Yeah. Oh my gosh. I'm totally Googling this after we finish recording. So
this is maybe a good time to notice that it's a good idea not to forget to bring a pair of tweezers with you to Joshua Tree, just in case you have to do any Cholla extractions.
Oh my gosh. Now, how does that affect like biking around here? Like, do you not want to get out on your e-bike or whatever? Like, get a pop tire?
Well, it's certainly possible that you could. And in fact, it has been known to happen that a Cholla could even go through a shoe. But, you know, people bike, you can hike, you don't have to worry about it for the most part. But, you know, having that pair of tweezers isn't a bad idea. We were just, you know, when we were there over President's Weekend, we were staying actually at a dispersed camping spot in the Mojave Desert nearby. And everybody got a little Cholla and it was fine. We all just pulled them out. It was no big deal.
All right. Awesome. How about Skull Rock and the Discovery Trail?
Yeah. So this is a super popular little trail. It's a 1.7 mile loop thereabouts, depending on which parts of it you actually do, to see some of the very famous and popular rock formations in the park. So Skull Rock is what it says. It's a rock formation that looks really uncannily like a human skull. It's on Park Boulevard between Jumbo Rocks and Live Oak. And you can start the loop from trailheads on either side of the road. There's a lot of interpretive signage. And, you know, in just a short little loop, you can see a lot of what Joshua Tree has to offer. So that's definitely one that's high up on my list. Another big famous rock formation is Arch Rock, which is an arch. And it's near the White Tank Campground and is another sort of quick and easy walk out to a very cool rock formation.
And how about if we want a little bit of a longer, more difficult hike?
Yeah. So if you're looking for something a little more strenuous, still, this isn't a super long hike, but it does have a lot of elevation gain in a short time. So it is pretty strenuous. But I recommend the Ryan Mountain Trail. It's a 3-mile trail, but it has 1,000 feet of elevation gain in just a 1.5-mile stretch of the trail. So it's going to get your heart pumping. But the payoff is sweeping panoramic views of the desert. And it's also easy to get to in the main area of the park.
All right. Now, when I think of rock climbing in California, I think of Yosemite. But you're about to tell us that Joshua Tree is also a really, really great place for rock climbing in California.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, I would consider it to be, you know, on par with Yosemite in terms of actual sort of climbing, the climbing community. You know, Yosemite has the most sort of epic, super challenging rock walls that some of the best climbers in the world are climbing. But for people who just are regular rock climbers who love climbing, I think Joshua Tree is at least on par with Yosemite and is, if you've ever had even the slightest inclination to rock climb, it's a great place to try your hand at it because there are climbs for every level of experience.
And do we have some outfitters that you would recommend if somebody's a novice or doesn't, you know, flies in and doesn't have their own equipment or whatever it may be?
Yeah, definitely. And unless you are a very experienced climber, I highly recommend going with a guide. And you're going to want to, there are a lot of guides, but you're going to want to make sure that whatever guide you're going with is permitted through an official climbing organization to be guiding in Joshua Tree. You're looking for organizations like PCGI or AMGA. And there are some climbing outfitters that have been leading Joshua Tree climbs for many, many years. Cliffhanger Guides is, you know, one of the best. I definitely think they're great. California Climbing School and Stone Adventures are two others, but you can look online, do a little research and just make sure that they're permitted. And they have trips, their climbs available for even very young kids. So
sounds like advice from a lawyer, Lauren. Make sure they have the permit.
Just want everybody to stay safe.
Oh, I'm sure. I'm sure. So how about ranger programs in the park?
Yeah. So there are great ranger programs. They have a great junior ranger program there. Our kids really like the booklet. You know, every park has their own sort of spin on what their ranger program looks like. The bigger campgrounds have recurring evening programs. So you can take a look at the schedule and when those are going to be happening. There's also a ranger-led tour of a place called Keys Ranch, which is an old preserved historic ranch, sort of ghost town-ish. And that can be fun if you're into that sort of thing and have the time.
All right. How about stargazing?
Yep. So, like I said, Joshua Tree is a dark sky park. And if you're in the Southern California area where it can be notoriously difficult to get any dark, Joshua Tree is a great escape for actually seeing the stars. So if you really want to see stars, try to go, you know, take a look at the schedule for the moon and try to go during a new moon, then you'll have the darkest skies. But I have to say that some of the most spectacular sights I've ever seen in Joshua Tree are, the moonrise. So if you happen to go around the time of a full moon and you're treated to the sight of the moon rising over the boulders, it really is very impressive. I mean, it is so bright. It hurts your eyes to look at it. It's almost like watching the sunrise. It's pretty, pretty spectacular.
I'm thinking of how much my son Max would love the stargazing and everything you're talking about. When we went to Yellowstone, as we mentioned on the podcast, his single favorite part of the trip was seeing falling stars. at Under Canvas Yellowstone. So you have moved, you're like moving Joshua Tree National Park, like way, way up my list here. I also want to take a sound bath, though I don't know exactly, what that is. So help me out with that.
Okay. Well, so I had to mention a little bit of the sort of groovy kind of hippie side of Joshua Tree, which is very much part of the Joshua Tree kind of origins. This is a community that's been here for a long time, and there's definitely some new agey vibe. So if you want to experience some of that kind of cultural side of Joshua Tree, then I highly recommend going to the Integration for a sound bath. Look online and make sure that there's one available at the time that you're going, if that's something that you want to do. A sound bath at the Integration is described as an unforgettable sound experience for those who seek deep relaxation, rejuvenation, and introspection. And it's basically some quartz crystal bowls that are played and create this sort of resonant, immersive sound experience.
Who isn't seeking deep relaxation, rejuvenation, and introspection? I guess some people are probably not seeking all three of those things. That sounds pretty cool. I mean, I think I would do it.
It's very groovy. So, yeah.
Okay, we're going to come back in a second. We still have more from Lauren Eber. We're going to talk about some food options and then wrap up the show. But before we do so, we have a sponsored message from our friends at RV SnapPad. Meet the world's only permanent jack pad. RV snap pads attach permanently to your RV leveling jack so you don't have to carry around blocks of wood or plastic blocks to level your towable or motorized RV. Simply snap them on one at a time and you are all set. RV snap pads go on in seconds and provide a lifetime of stability on the road. They are built for wanderers, adventurers, and vacationers just like you. We added RV snap pads to our travel trailer 2 years ago and love their durability, design, and functionality. They also make setting up and breaking down camp faster and easier. Head over to rvsnappad.com and use their Submit Your Rig tab to answer a few quick questions, and they will find you the perfect set of snap pads for your towable or motorized RV. You can purchase RV snap pads directly from their website or use their Where to Buy tab to find a dealer near you. Join the RV snap pad revolution today. To find out more, visit rvsnappad.com. Welcome back to the show, everybody. We are here with Lauren Eber from A Fam with a Van, and we just got an amazing overview of Joshua Tree National Park, campgrounds inside of the park, campgrounds outside of the park, hikes, stargazing, sound baths, etc. And we do have some good food options here because all of that fun stuff is going to get us hungry. So, Lauren, what are your top recommendations for food around the park?
Yeah, so there aren't food options inside the park itself. So while you're in the park, you're going to want to come prepared with provisions to be able to cook, have picnics, and so on. But the good news is that the gateway town of Joshua Tree has a lot of really fun food options, and there are also some in the surrounding nearby areas as well. So, you know, for me, no trip to Joshua Tree is complete without a trip to Pappy and Harriet's, which is an iconic, very funky restaurant and bar with tons of personality in a place called Pioneer Town, which is this Old West movie set that was built in the 1940s. It's about a 40-minute drive from the park, but it's totally worth it for the experience. It has barbecue and live music on weekends. It does get crowded, though, so if that's something that you really want to do, I would encourage you to make a reservation and then make sure that you plan time to get there, spend a little bit of time in the area. It's a fun classic Joshua Tree experience.
Now, can we get good pizza anywhere in California?
Well, look, if I'm talking to someone from New York or New Jersey, I'm not going to pretend that California can compete. However, when you are camping and you're working up a hunger, there definitely is pizza that is going to satisfy you at the end of the day. And a place called Pie for the People has New York style thin crust pizza and a lot of creative menu options. So it's very popular in Joshua Tree. And one of the fun things that you can do is you can order takeout and then go back and have it at your campsite if you want, or eat it there in the town of Joshua Tree.
I mean, after a day of hiking in the desert, sounds pretty perfect.
Exactly. I would say that it's better than your typical sort of national park pizza joint. I mean, it's a great spot.
And you know, you people in California, you do food right. So I don't mean to be snotty about the pizza thing.
You're entitled.
You have Joshua Tree National Park, as I mentioned. I have Turkey Swamp Park. So I have to like pull the superiority card on something. And I guess it always comes back to pizza for us New Jersey people. So there are other options for good food. What are they?
Yeah, there are a lot of places. Crossroads Cafe is a classic. It's an old school cafe diner. And, you know, a lot of the spaces are crowded. Sometimes it can be easier to get a table there, but it's still a great spot. There's a spot that's pretty famous called Natural Sisters, but it's really crowded. It's a super popular breakfast spot, but, you know, it has long lines. It's particularly known for its vegetarian and vegan options, but it's a great spot to get breakfast or brunch. And then there's also the Joshua Tree Saloon, which is a fun restaurant and bar in the town of Joshua Tree. And what's great about this spot is that it's frequented by locals and tourists. It's really just sort of a local hangout, but with plenty of visitors as well. So it's a fun spot for having a drink and soaking in some of the local vibe.
Lauren, I can't thank you enough. And this is just episode 1 of 3. So you're going to come back. We're going to do Death Valley and we're going to do Valley of Fire. And your notes for those look incredible too. And I just have to say, you know, after 8 years of podcasting, occasionally people will say, well, aren't you bored of doing that yet? And my answer is always like, no, not at all. Like it's just as interesting now as it was when we started. And a huge part of that, and I said this on the podcast recently, a huge part of that is just the American landscape is endlessly fascinating to me. There's so many places to go. And I absolutely love doing episodes like this with the travel content to help people plan their trips. So thank you so much for putting this together for us.
It's my pleasure. And I hope that you and lots of other people get out to this incredible park that really has a special place in my heart.
All right. So we'll see you at Death Valley. Deal?
All right. Sounds good. See you there.
Okay.
Bring
awesome.
Water.
Thank you, Lauren.
Okay. Bye.
A big thank you for listening to this episode of the RV Atlas, and a big thank you to our sponsors, to Neighbor, the Thetford Corporation, Campspot, Yogi Bear's Jellystone Park Camp Resorts, RV Snaphead, and Go RVing. To find out more about the topics discussed in this show, head on over to thervatlas.com. And to join the friendliest group of RVers, head on over to the RV Atlas group on Facebook. If you enjoyed this show, please consider leaving us a review over at iTunes. And we'll see you at the campground.